At this point, if I stand up straight, I have about 2 inches on my daughter, my firstborn. If I'm barefoot and she's in sneakers, we see eye to eye, which is fabulous and wild. We're going on bigger and bigger adventures together, and this brings me so much joy. And alongside the delight of parenting a teenager, and it is a delight, alongside this is the creeping realization that the time we have together is awfully short. Despite all the cliches, this is taking me by surprise. The toddler days were long. The toddler months were long. That season was filled with its own wonder, and the hours sometimes passed too slowly to concern myself with how brief this endeavor of raising children is. Now I find myself bracing. I make plans in light of the fact that we have just 4 more years with our daughter at home. I recognize with a new sense of urgency that the other things I choose, even if they are good, are also a choice against time with my kids. You are dust, and to dust you shall return. We are finite. We can't do it all. We can't be together endlessly. We have to choose. When I am willing to listen, this truth stops me cold. We live in a death-denying culture. We receive a constant stream of suggestions for how we can try to sidestep aging or dying. The process of dying itself is often hidden away, sanitized with the funeral industry's assurances that they will take care of everything on our behalf. And setting death's inevitability aside, our culture wants us to believe that we shouldn't have to choose between one thing and another, ever. There's a clamoring promise that we can buy it all, have it all, do it all. But it's a lie, and a dangerous one. I think we come together today because on some level, we know it's not true, and we want to live another way. We come together to remember that in the long run, we are dust. We are marked with this sign of our mortality, and we're reminded that God's blessing courses through all of it, from our beginning to our end. And this day is a time to sit with the uncomfortable reality that our decisions matter deeply, that every time we choose one thing, at least in that moment, we are choosing against something else. The big question for me, though, is how? How will I decide how to spend my days and my hours, which together become how I spend my life? While this question hangs in the air, Jesus offers a teaching that feels both challenging and convoluted. Beware of practicing your piety before others, he says. And in a few minutes, we will mark ourselves with ashes, right after he's told us, seemingly, to practice our faith in secret. We need to back up. For starters, this is another instance of where our translation falls short. A more accurate translation of the Greek has Jesus warning us, beware of practicing your righteousness before others in order to be seen by them. Righteousness, not piety. From the beginning, the focus is on being in right relationship. That's what righteousness fundamentally is. It's about having our actions match the love that God gives us and calls us into. It's about having our choices build these relationships up into something holy. We also have to remember that Jesus is speaking in a drastically different context. The people listening would have reliably kept these practices. He does not wonder if people will give alms or pray or fast. They do. And so he's coaching them on how they orient their hearts as they enter in. These practices are not a given anymore. No one is making us do this. And there aren't the same kinds of rewards if we're seen keeping the faith today. None of you is likely to get accolades if people see you with ashes on your forehead. If anything, they'll probably just give you puzzled looks. So while he needed to remind people back then how to enter in, he's offering us the guidance of how to practice twice over, giving us both the what to do and the how to do it. How often I hear these lessons, and how often I forget them. The encouragement comes repeatedly, and it's hard for me to trust it. It's hard to stick with it. I arrive at Ash Wednesday wrestling with these quick questions of finitude. If my time is limited, and indeed it is, how will I use it? If I confront these questions, if I carry them around with me, I'm tempted also to try to figure it all out by myself. I can tie myself in knots in the process, trying to force the way forward. And plenty of days I feel regret and frustration seeping in when it doesn't pan out the way I'd hoped and planned, whatever it is. I so want Jesus to give me a clear rubric, a straightforward checklist for how to make these necessary and difficult decisions. I want him to lay it all out for me so that I can then put it to work. I want this map so that I can make it happen, and frankly, so I can pretend that I'm in control. Jesus responds with a totally different how. He doesn't tell me how to choose or how to weigh the options before me. Instead, he offers clarity on how to practice, with an invitation to go deeper. Give alms and pray and fast, he reminds me. Give and pray and fast with your heart in the right place, with your focus not on what these things will do for you, but how they will lead you back to God. Jesus is trying to guide us in an entirely different way of being. And Lent is a time when we get to practice that way and bring it into our bones. He's asking us to practice noticing what those around us need and then gather the strength to respond. He's asking us to pray, to step into that mysterious combination of deep listening and courageous bearing of our souls. He's asking us to pay attention in and through our bodies. Fasting is one way to do this. But it might be walking the labyrinth, or breath prayer, or walking a pilgrimage. And as he's inviting us to adopt these practices as a way of life, he's also asking us to hold them in a particular way. Rather than doing them for the world in order to be seen or recognized or complimented somehow to get ahead, he's asking us to do them inwardly. To do them earnestly, to do them simply because they are good and worth doing. He's asking us to keep these practices because they will reliably draw us into the heart of God, and because God will transform us through these ancient means. I want to figure out what I should do, how to cram more goodness into my life, how to bend time in order to enjoy my kids just a little bit more. I want a straight line between my big questions here and clear answers somewhere out there. But this is the world talking, the one that says I can have it all. This is my finite human self trying to push back on the bounds of being mortal. Here's the twist. God doesn't seem to believe that our beginning and ending as dust is a bad thing. It's simply the way the world turns in all its fleeting beauty. God does care, though, about us living with our whole hearts for the time we have, however much that may be. God longs for us to turn ourselves towards what is love and grace and beauty and healing, no matter what the world may think of us as we do so. The way to live well is not by mapping our own clever design, much as I sometimes try to make it so. Instead, we're called to follow the simple how that Jesus leads us to this night, turning our hearts back to God as we give and as we pray and as we fast. We are invited to enter into these practices with our whole heart, trusting that as we practice them, God will help us to face all the tough choices that come before us, and God will fill our finite lives with grace.